You are listening to Legion of Substitute Podcasters, Episode 70, Back to the Future, a conversation with Paul Levitz. And welcome to episode 70 of Legion of Substitute Podcasters. I'm Paul French, and today I am slightly nervous, lad. Mm. As you heard off the top there, we're going to be talking to Paul Levitz today, and we're looking forward to it. Although I feel a bit like I'm sort of untethered in time, because I feel as though we've already talked to him.
That's that deja vu.
Yeah, exactly. I feel as though it's already happened, and I'm thinking to myself, I think it went pretty well, so... So
I think you've been watching too much Lost.
I can be a bit less nervous.
He is back.
That's right. Oh, yes, yeah. As of this, it is back, and I can't seem to remember exactly what happened.
I bet it was awesome, though.
I bet it was. So that's me.
And I am Darren Noel, and I'm Espionage Boy.
That's all the expression you're going to get for that. I'm Matt Kramer, and I'm relieved, lad, because I'm glad that we nailed this. We were able to actually score this interview.
Absolutely. Kudos to you, Matt. You made that happen, man.
Just start calling you connections, kid.
Exactly.
This guy knows how to schmooze his way into the DC offices, let me tell you.
Well, he's scared of him.
That's right. Fear the Kramer.
I'd send Mike Norton out to head Matt off.
He's not so tough. he does have two pugs.
Oh, yes, he does.
Ninja pugs.
Exactly.
Yes. And I'm Scott Coles, and today I am freezing, kid. I am down in my basement in the monkey cave here, and it is cold. Witch's kit.
Yeah. I'm with you on that.
In a brass bra.
Even with the snuggie on. I don't know what the hell's going on.
Wow. It's 9 degrees here in my neck of the woods.
Is that real degrees or like your degrees?
That's
our degrees.
Yeah, so it's minus 13 here.
Yeah,
that's about what it is here too.
Darn cold.
Yeah,
it's
just ain't
not
right.
That much warmer down here. So
what's that?
It's not that much warmer down here. I hate to say.
And that's just not right.
We have snow and ice coming Saturday.
Oh,
again.
Yeah, but see, Scott, they don't know how to deal with it. It's like us trying to deal with summer.
Oddly enough, I have no trouble dealing with summer.
Indeed.
Well, actually, friend of the show, Logan, ironed me and said, so what's there to do in Atlanta in July? And I was like, sweat.
Find someplace with air conditioning. Mm-hmm. Stay there.
I mean, exactly. There's nothing to do outside. We're all inside.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, 9 degrees here right now by your degrees.
Yeah, it's 43 outside right now.
And yeah, so yeah, yeah.
And it's top of the morning to you, so ain't getting any better.
All right, so I think we have a little call to make. So I'm just going to do that again. I feel as though I already did.
Mm. Activate the time scanner.
Yes, exactly. Bing-loop. Well, everyone, we got a special treat here today. We, as everybody knows, we here at the Legion of Substitute Podcasters are huge fans of the Paul Levitz run of the Legion, and we are fortunate enough to have Mr. Levitz on the line with us. Hello, Paul.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
You'll have to excuse us. We're going to try not to to devolve into the Chris Farley line of questioning and saying, remember that time that you had them fight Darkseid? That was cool.
That was real cool. Oh, my God, that was so cool.
Listen, I made it to my second visit to Stan Lee's house before I pulled out my bound volume Avengers 1 to 16 and said, okay, Stan, I promise to be a grown-up when we go to dinner with Joan in a few minutes, but right now you're going to sign this while I drool, and then I'll go back to being an adult. So I'm
there
with you,
go.
Folks.
Well, yeah, we're in awesome. Good company then.
coming from fandom yourself, I guess it gives you the extra dimension of understanding when there's awkward pauses.
Yeah, exactly. So, and speaking of that, Paul, you came up through doing fanzines, which was like the podcast of the day. And
how did prehistoric podcasting?
How did that influence your approach when you came into actually creating comics?
Well, you know, it's very hard to separate out pieces of your life as influences. You can, as a writer, sometimes identify a book you were reading or a writer's work over the years who you felt particularly influenced you. In fact, I'll often immerse myself in a particular writer's work before sitting down to write something, if that's mm-hmm. sort of the tone I want to be in or the portion of my brain I want to access. But the cumulative experiences of life, it's a little harder to tell. I mean, mm-hmm. I had a lot of years in comics fandom overlapping my early years as a professional. A lot of my relationships with the people whose views helped shape how I work as a writer are people who I first met as a fan and then worked with as a professional, or who were friends who I played poker with over the years, and the poker table discussion would be about what one might grandiosely call the philosophy of making comics. Mm-hmm. So I don't quite know how to separate each piece of it.
Right.
Certainly, having been a comic book fan, I understand how much people care about the material, the effect it has on them, the importance that consistency can play, which was a very vital factor to me and many members of my generation of fandom. Mm-hmm. Not so much continuity, perhaps in the modern sensibility, but consistency of tone, consistency mm-hmm. of fact.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I guess that kind of leads us into when you talk about consistency and that sort of thing. And I'm going to refer to something, and you've probably been asked about this before, but it's the Levitt's paradigm that Denny O'Neill talks about in his DC Comics Guide to Writing Comics. And so this basically is where he sort of shows the way of keeping all of those disparate plot lines up in the air, and you know, this is something you were really famous for, where you'd have seeds planted for a storyline that was going to come out much later on, and I wonder if you could just sort of speak to that, to your methodology in writing.
Like most things, your strength is also your weakness. I have a occasionally foggy memory of people will wander in and tell me about a story I wrote or something that developed in my work, and I'll scratch my head and say, that was mine? I don't remember that. When I made the foolish mistake of sitting on the Fan Pro trivia contest at San Diego a couple of years ago, Mark Waid got the answers to all the questions about my stories much faster than I did.
He's a bastard like that.
He's so miserable, but I was calling him to apologize because in exactly that memory fashion, in a recent interview, I had attributed the little identifier bursts to Jeff, and it was pointed out to me on one or another of the websites that, as usual, my memory had failed me, and that dated back to Mark's run with Barry Kitson on the mm-hmm, Legion. Mm-hmm. So I called Mark up to say, oops, sorry. We had a nice chat. I have a lot of respect for what he did with the Legion in that mm-hmm. in that run and what he was trying to do. But at any rate, given the weaknesses of my memory, putting it down on paper seemed like a really good plan. And the approach I was using for the Legion in the second run I did, which started around 1980 or 1981, mm-hmm. Very much emphasized subplot and cross-development. I have been a great fan of that structural style of writing going back to Altman's films and Bochco's television, and of course what Stan and Roy had largely developed at Marvel. Because my memory was weak, because there were so many flying pieces going on in the Legion at any point, which was part of the fun for me as a writer, as well as I think ultimately fun for the readers, I just said, I think I better write this down. And I'd redo a scribble sheet of it constantly. It's not dissimilar to what a lot of guys do in television writing, in creating arcs in the years since. It's become more and more a common standard. I think at the time that I was using that written tool for the first time, it was a rarer style of writing, and most of the guys who were doing it were the guys who had better memories than I did. So the fact that I had designed this crutch suddenly made it a paradigm instead of a crush. Which is very kind of Denny.
Makes it a more scholarly approach.
But I do think that there were a few kind of rules of thumb that emerged from that that were helpful and productive as I thought about it. Having a concrete tool there, the one that seemed to me the most significant that I've certainly violated, but that I believe is a great one when you can do it, is that you should always be moving forward every time you're revisiting one of these subplots or these elements. You shouldn't just go back and they're over here hanging out on planet Blifflig, and they're still playing chess on Blifflig. Three more moves since last time. Come back next month, and we'll see if there's a fourth move. But you should learn something. Something should advance the story each time you visit it. And I've tried to do that as consistently as I could, and it became an excellent, again, rule of thumb to beat myself with. Are you living up to the principle you enunciate?
Right.
No, I'm cheating this month, guys.
Who is I see, not as I do.
But at least I could feel guilty about it and hopefully nudge myself into a better performance on it.
So, okay, let's first talk about Legion characters that you've created. Who is your favorite of the characters that you created?
My favorites are always depend on what story I'm writing. I really don't have enduring permanent favorites because it depends on whose life I'm giving some trouble. And I'm having a lot of fun at the moment with Saturn Girl, who was always, I think, a good character. But Jeff did a couple of interesting things with her in the Secret Origin story in Superman that have influenced me in what I'm doing with her in the historical piece. We're doing an adventure, and it's kind of fun to have her going through that arc there. And she gets to have some interesting moments in the contemporary storyline. So it's sort of, I haven't done anything to her in a while.
You quite famously did a few things to her the last time around, if I remember correctly.
You know,
you gotta get down dirty, Paul.
Oh, no.
I'm just not a gentle god. the joy of being writer is you get to move these chess pieces along with the power of divine intervention, and I think the power that we've got in the real world must have a hell of a sense of humor, and I'm just trying to live up to his standard.
Very nice, very nice.
Does that explain your use of the time dropper a lot?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. good character.
Well, and there's a character that by the time you got your hands on him, you had changed him very much from that sort of initial, he seemed very kind of... You felt like there was a you felt like there was a mustache that he was twirling under that hood.
You try to modernize the stuff to whatever the technology or the worldview. I think the average kid who was reading was the original Time Trapper story, Ed Hamilton's. I think it was Ed's, not Jerry's. I was one of the kids reading it. he seemed like a pretty cool villain by the standards of my 8-year-old mind at the time. By the time I got around to writing him, I think the average reader we had was considerably older than 8 years old. And Pepper Matt.
Yeah.
A little bit of that. Was often explaining to me the principles of time travel.
Yeah.
That, you know, according to Hawking, if we're going to, you know, if we're going to have this, this has to be happening here. You got to get it right. And you needed a more sophisticated treatment. Mm. And hopefully I lived up to that.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Yeah. Now, yeah. The first Ouijin story I ever read was one of your Time Trapper stories with the pocket universe. So, definitely a complicated story there.
Oh yeah,
especially for a first time reader.
Yeah, well, I mean, the first time reader challenge for Legion is an enormous one. I'm very sensitized to it now. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the first time of the three times that I'm writing the book that I'm not taking over a book that has commercial momentum. When I first sat down on Legion, it was a reasonably successful book and really a mainstay of the DC line for many years. The second time, it was one of our strongest titles already in the comic shop market, which was beginning to be more and more important to the company. Mm-hmm. This is the first time I'm kind of starting the car going from park. And that means that to succeed, my first issues have to make sense to new readers. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting challenge to simultaneously put enough stuff in it that guys like you who adore the material and can stump me on the home planet of a character, that you'll find enough Easter eggs and enough nuance that you'll enjoy, but at the same time, somebody showing up for the first time will say, "Oh, that was a good ride. I'd like to come back for more."
Mm-hmm.
Yep. One of the things that is helping a little bit in the process is Brian Cunningham, who's editing it, is working with one of his assistant editors, a young man named Sean Ryan, who was never a Legion reader before. Brian was, Sean never was, so you get two different views when they're reading the scripts, and they each give me feedback that sort of, you know, why is this here? Was this enough for me? Too much for me? Not enough for me? And it kind of gives a couple of different levels of balance, which is
mm-hmm.
fun.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Now you've mentioned just thinking of the new series. We're talking about how you've worked with some great artists in the past. Now, has an artist been announced yet for the adventure?
No, I don't think we've announced an artist for that yet.
Okay. Now you did mention in a recent interview the possibility of working with Keith again, and with Jim Sherman.
One of the delights that I've had in the whatever it is, 4 or 5 months since announcing that I was stepping down from the desk and going back to writing is the number of my old friends who have shown up on the doorstep saying, you know, I'd like to draw something you write. Come on, let's have some fun.
Absolutely. Are there any other artists that you'd like to work with?
There's a very long list of artists I'd like to work with. And given my memory, it would never be exhaustive and would piss somebody off.
You just start another shirt.
just say you're going to do the Karate Kid Death Special with Keith Giffen drawing, and we'll all be happy.
Shut it.
Well, if I can figure out how to explain how he's died twice in all of it, then certainly Keith would have to be the one who would come in and do that just so that he could have the fun of drawing the flashbacks of him dying each time.
Why does Keith like killing the Karate Kid all the time?
I don't know. Maybe he was scared by a karate instructor when he was young.
He never liked kung fu.
We all have our issues.
Yeah, there you go.
That's true. So you've talked about how you have never been, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, about how you've never been really afraid to sort of mess with the lives of the various characters. Of the messing around with their lives that you've done, is there anything that you think, I wish I'd done that differently?
Oh, probably. I mean, there's nothing that, you know, leaps out to me and says, you know, this was your great mistake in that sense. But again, hopefully you learn over the years and you've got better ways of doing it. I don't think I did anything like that in Legion that I look at as sadly as I do some of the stuff on the Death of Earth 2 Batman, which should have been better done.
How so?
The villain wasn't important enough. It wasn't the right enough moment. I wasn't viewing him with the strength of the character that he deserved to be, perhaps. Didn't give him enough of the right moment.
Oh, interesting.
A bigger send-off.
Yeah,
it probably should have been the Joker or someone. Someone established, but that's okay.
I just picked up that issue recently. It had disappeared in the over the years, and so I finally did find a copy recently. And I still love all that stuff.
but you got to tell the a good Earth 2 Joker story in your Huntress stories.
A little bit, but still not the same thing. I don't know that should have been the Joker per se, but just I just should have done that one better.
Now are there things that you that you would have liked to have done but weren't able to do due to various things that were going on in the line?
Not a lot. I mean, it's pretty well documented that I had another solution to Byrne's redo of Superman to keep Superboy in the Legion as sort of just young Superman.
Mm-hmm.
But that really was the only major debate we had back and forth. And I have total respect for where John's position was on that.
Mm-hmm.
Just the selfish point of view of what I thought served Legion better.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, that was your home.
Yeah.
Now, looking at the, we've seen Yildiray's teaser image that was posted on the DCU blog the other week, and that's exciting on its own because his artwork just looks fantastic. I think the thing with teaser images now is that people tend to look at them like Rosetta Stones for a series.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking of with Lost coming up for its last season, everyone's analyzing the heck out of these Last Supper images, and I think that people are sort of applying that same brush to anything they see as a teaser image, and so some people have talked about they looked at that picture and they're like, but I don't see XS or Gates. Do you have any plans for those characters or for those threads that were left at the end of Legion of Three Worlds?
Yeah, I think we have to touch all of those things eventually. And the challenge is how much can you get in which piece of space?
Mm-hmm.
And also just rereading all of those things like Legion of Three Worlds carefully enough to make sure that I have properly identified all the loose threads hanging.
We can send you a list. It's okay.
we've got notes of fairly lengthy annotations on our episodes.
Research is always appreciated. I don't read fan fiction, but I'm happy to read anything that is fan analysis.
There you go.
All right.
With Legionnaires who came in under your watch, with looking to say Dawnstar during your first run, and then in the second run you had Invisible Kid 2.
Mm-hmm.
How were each of these characters first conceived, and did you enjoy the way that they evolved as Legionnaires?
Well, Donnie was Grell's. Mike was supposed to be doing the book, and one of my first questions to any artist I work with is, what would you like to draw? Mm-hmm. That's how we got Dawnstar. It's later how we got, I think, Tellus and Quizlet from Steve Lytle. And then I try and figure out, based on the picture, some logic to who the character can be. Invisible Kid was more of a structural one that it bothered me enormously at that point that we hadn't successfully managed to have an African Legionnaire.
Mm-hmm.
In the kind of micro view of the world that we were in at that point, that was the largest American racial group that mm-hmm. wasn't represented. And I thought in the culture of the business kind of thought of ourselves as we were producing comics for America. Mm-hmm. It's now more of a world culture and therefore even more embarrassing that we don't have a greater diversity in the material. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that's something that we'll be addressing over the course of the first year or so of the book.
Right.
Excess will help you there.
Yeah. Yeah, she's an interesting character. Mm-hmm. I've not done all the homework to go back and reread the stories to have a broad enough sense of her life, but certainly gives you something else. And Gates gives you something else in terms of the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's a great character.
The alienness of it all.
Mm-hmm.
But so with Invisible Kid, it was one, you know, really there should be someone of color and mm-hmm. not purple. and in trying to find ways of making him a more worldly, more interesting character, I came on the Francophone approach
mm-hmm.
Because so much of Africa remained Francophone based mm-hmm. on the enduring colonial influence and the French insanity about trying to keep their language alive and primary wherever it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much his story.
Yeah. So when you talk about the diversity of the Legion, and that brings to mind with the current sort of worldview in the Legion, as Jeff has kind of built it up to, is that whole area of xenophobia, and mm-hmm. Does that give you more opportunity to explore that kind of diversity?
Well, it gives you a different lens to explore it through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the original Legion material, everything from Binder through Hamilton, Siegel, and to large extent, the younger generation guys, Jim, Carrie, me,
mm-hmm.
Had a very golden age science fiction optimistic view of the future. We're all going to get along. And I'd like to
believe... cars.
I'm sorry?
And we'll have flying cars.
Okay. and frankly, I think that has to be true because I think the alternative is we're not going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Given the technology level that exists in the world today and that is going to exist, if humanity doesn't find a way to get past dealing with each other based on labels, there's not going to be a planet 1,000 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly we're living in a time where the human equivalent of xenophobia is one of the major issues in the world. Will we get past it? Will we find a way to deal with it? And Jeff's introduction of that into the Legion's time gives you an interesting set of metaphors to play with and an interesting way to kind of raise the consciousness and
mm-hmm. yeah.
get the debate going. Earthman is a fascinating character in that regard. I think I'm going to have a ton of fun with him.
mm-hmm.
And, you know, as a writer, sometimes you come up with an entire plot line just to deliver a line. And at least in that case, there's a line coming, I think, at the end of the fifth or sixth issue, fifth if I time it right,
mm-hmm.
that just pays off a whole bunch of stuff that's leading to it, and it's just there because I really want to have somebody deliver that line.
Nice.
Very nice.
So looking at some of the runs that you've done and you know, and things that... With all the things that you're sort of juggling as you come back to the Legion, thinking of like things like Great Darkness or An Eye for an Eye, these are fan favorite stories. But are there stories that don't get talked about so much that you're really proud of? Things that you don't think get the attention they should?
Oh, I don't know about don't get the attention they should. I mean, I'm outrageously pleased that some of my stories are remembered as long as they are. it's astounding to me that, you know, 20 years after. I did it 25 years after I did it. Great Darkness Saga places is high on things like what was it, Comic Book Resources did that top 100 storylines thing a month or two ago, and it placed number 11. It's like, whoa.
Wow.
There's a lot of stuff below that that I would rank higher.
No point in arguing.
It's all where you sit in life and what you read and, you know, when you were 12.
It is, because when I was 12, I was reading the Great Darkness Saga.
Sorry. It's incurable at that point then. For the most part, I'll let the verdict be where the verdict is from the readers in the process. I'm thrilled that story, Universal Project was one of my favorites, the Censor Girl storyline, and just the fact that some of my JSA stuff has survived to have the kind of meaning in the DC universe, both the origin story there and the HUAC story ended up becoming so much more important in DC history than I would have ever expected.
Yeah.
Cool.
Definitely. So with new members in the Baxter run, you really did a lot of shifting around of the team and with new characters like Tellus and Quizlet and Sensor Girl, Polar Boy and Magnetic Kid. Now, which one of those, what do you feel that the new dynamic that they brought to the Legion was?
Much of it is just that it's new in and of itself. You put a new ingredient in the stew and it changes the stew. Mm. It gives you someone else to be reacted to, a new set of friendships. Mm-hmm. It's no different than why we all pay attention when the new kid is transferred in our class in public school. It's not necessarily that they're the most beautiful girl you've ever seen or that they're the best athlete, but who's the new kid? Is he going to be friends with us? Is he going to be one of the jocks? What's going on here?
You're saying you weren't one of the jocks, Paul?
I'm sorry?
Are you saying you weren't one of the jocks?
Oh, dear God. My youngest son is on the hockey team and is displaying muscles that are from some remote ancestor somewhere. Either both of his grandfathers were reasonable athletes, so it's probably a recessive from there. But it's astounding that someone descended from me could possibly be built like that.
What position does he play?
He's done both right wing a lot, and he's done a certain amount of defense this year too.
Nice.
Keep rotating him back and forth.
Yeah.
Well, two of us are Canadian, so hockey stuff is very important.
we have a lot of Canadian.
I've learned to have a certain appreciation for it with Garrett's activities.
Yeah, perfect, perfect.
Matter of fact, the Stanley Cup is in my city right now.
Oh, hey.
I don't think he's coming up to claim it. You're probably safe.
So in talking about these changing rosters and the different influences, do you plan on toying around with the current roster or introducing new characters, or you just
sure?
Kinda,
yeah. Yay!
Wouldn't be fun if I wasn't screwing around with it.
Very good point.
You're not just going to have them come in with like lead masks on and just be somebody we already met, though, right?
Been there, done that.
I hear you there.
So, you know, what about Mon-El? Is he a character we're going to see much of in, without giving away anything?
Not sure what's going on with Mon-El. Mm-hmm. He's been in and out of the Phantom Zones in so many different ways lately. I think I'm going to wait until I see what James has finished doing with him.
Absolutely. Okay, guys, I don't want to hog all the questioning. So if you guys have things that you want to.
Yes, Dan, you're awful quiet.
Hmm?
I said you've been awful quiet.
Well, I'm incognito today.
Oh, that's true.
Darren's sneaking a call during work, so. we actually did, We did speak to Tony Bedard last summer, and one thing that that you both have in common is that you both came into the industry as editors, although you had actually started working at DC during high school. But do you think that had a significant effect on your writing as well? And I know you said about not being able to compartmentalize things, but that would seem to be something that would have a...
Well, I certainly learned my craft behind an editor's desk rather than sitting in a lonely writer's room, you know, trying to figure out how to do it. Mm-hmm. I had done rewrite work on an army of scripts. I'd gone back and forth with Joe Orlando looking over my shoulder at stuff I'd done, teaching me. So that certainly had enormous effect on my craft. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it also affected things like my professionalism of getting material in.
Right. Right. Now, so we're looking at a new issue starting, a new series starting, and getting into adventure. And this is all basically this spring we're looking at. Is that?
Yeah, I think it's May for the new title and June for adventure.
Yeah, well, obviously we're very excited about this, and but so when in managing these two time frames in tandem, do you anticipate sort of a lot of crossover? Like, for example, you know, setting sort of things in motion as you delve into the past to influence what's going on in the other title?
Oh, have faith in my evilness, boys.
We're going to get white streaks down our hair in a minute if we're not careful.
You know, what's the fun otherwise? I mean, you want to plant things everywhere you can possibly plant them.
Yeah.
Including, you know, other stuff I'm doing elsewhere in the DC universe that will ultimately have relevance in the Legion's time.
Oh.
Ooh, now that's a spicy meatball right there.
Okay. That was one of the great things about reading the Legion in the 90s. I know this is not your stuff, but they had the acronym Legion and Legion mm-hmm. at the same time, and there was a lot of crossover between, you know, the both times.
Yeah, I'm not as anxious for that as I am for just sort of planting seeds that take a long time to grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's that. You know, that's an exciting thing for fans to hear, because there is, you know, there has been such a change. You know, from when you did, you know, that especially in your second run with the Legion. I mean, it was a lengthy run, and you know that doesn't seem to happen as much these days. There's often a lot of sort of changeover, and so, you know, you can think of a few lengthy runs over the last few years. You know,
well, I mean, it didn't happen often then. I mean, there's not. I managed 100 issues unbroken, which, you know, there are. Last time I paid attention to it, there were four or five superhero runs of that kind of length or longer at DC and Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
You can't quite compare it on the writer side. You can't quite compare that to the independent world where people own and control their own properties to one mm-hmm. extent or another.
Yeah.
But where you're just hired help and you come in and do it. But it was pretty rare then. It's still pretty rare. I mean, there were longer runs, certainly, particularly chronologically. I mean, you have, you know, Kaniger doing 22 years straight on Wonder Woman, pretty much.
That's a good point. It's not, yeah.
it's not that many issues because they didn't publish as frequently.
Right.
You know, I don't claim any primacy on it, but it never was a very common thing, and certainly isn't today. And I don't know if it's doable today either. Right. And we'll see. Nobody's said the book's mine for the next 100 issues, and the audience hasn't read it yet to say whether they want me off stage at the end of reading one of them. So.
But if the audience is there, would you like to take another long run at it?
I think the kinds of stories I tell better are ones that are told over a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. If I have a distinctive skill in this business as a writer, it's how I kind of cook the simmering pot.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's working, I'd like to stay a while. Certainly no place else I'm in a rush to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any specific goals that you want to accomplish with the Superboy and the Legion's Secret Origins? Because
you're given that series exists in part that way because of a challenge Jeff raised, which was, I think, a really rational one, which is if I want to get somebody started on Legion, there's no single volume to hand them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Can you make a book that will make this make sense? And I don't know if I can.
Right.
But that's at least part of what I'm trying to do there.
Awesome.
Nice. Yeah, actually,
that is very awesome.
To piggyback onto that is we actually had a listener come onto our forum recently, and he was just sort of asking, you know, where do I start?
Right.
And there's a couple of people that, and one in particular mentioned the Legion Annual One, the computer story, you know, and said, you know, this is a great introduction to all these characters. You are kind of dropped in with some plot lines on the go, and you know, talk about planting seeds. I mean, they're all over that book. Mm-hmm. And so a few people mentioned that as a key place to start. So
yeah, I mean, that's part of what it was intended to do, certainly, was to invite people in. Mm-hmm. But again, in a different time and world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it worked for that. I totally think that that story worked as an intro to new readers.
Yeah, it was a big one that sort of brought me back in, you know, once I found a newsstand that was carrying.
right.
Once I found a convenience store in the area next door to my dentist, and he was
different time and a different world.
It really was.
Thank God Paul had tooth decay.
Yeah. Hey now. So
only I could still get a slushie at the comic shop would be all set.
There you go. So speaking of runs on stories and that sort of thing, and your new role as going back to writing as you are, do you have any aspirations for any creator owned work?
Yeah, not so much from the point of view of whether it's creator owned or not. I always kind of felt that was a spurious way to look at creative work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's certainly a relevant business distinction how it's owned, but I hope to do a variety of things that weren't possible to do as a creative person the last time I was writing. I mean, the Legion's a very wonderful thing to come home to, but I'd also hope to do some graphic novel length stuff and see what can be done in that form, which didn't exist. Mm-hmm. I just did a little very, very tiny thing for Vertigo that has not been announced yet because it's part of a small stunt that they're doing. Ooh. And it was just neat to play with a different set of tools there.
Yeah.
Speaking of the graphic novels, I'm very excited for the Earth One books coming out next year. And is there any chance of a Legion Earth One type story in the future?
Oh, beats me. you know, I'm not in that part of the game anymore.
Yeah.
Now that you're back writing, do you have any sway in getting some of the older stories that have never been collected released in trade paperbacks?
I don't think typically writers have enormous sway over getting their stuff in trade paperback other than the current material.
Mm-hmm.
I think the real sway in any of that really comes from the reader reception and how the stuff sells.
Right.
You heard it, people. Buy the heck out of the lead.
yeah, exactly.
I loved the Life and Death of Feralad hardcover, and I'd love to see like Earth War or the Great Darkness Saga in that format.
Mm-hmm. Earth War, unfortunately, I don't think collects as well as it read as a serial because the art changed so much with the different inkers and the different pencilers. You know, you go from Jim Sherman to Joe Staton, both of them are wonderfully talented guys, but in absolutely utterly different fashion.
Right.
And I think if you put that together as a book, it's probably really jarring. Which is a shame because I was really fond of the structure of the story and I think I did a lot of good stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that I don't know that that ever makes it to collected form in the world that we live in now.
Right.
We'll have to make our own.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Ding them up and
buy my comics. Here. Yeah. They look much better on the shelf. They're easier to pull down and reference.
Mm-hmm. You got a ton of them, don't you?
I believe the architects had estimated 3/4 of a ton.
Wow.
When I did the Mr. Blandings Built His Dream House routine some years ago, I built in a set of bookcases that run 12 foot high, 3 foot deep, and ended up with a steel beam holding them up.
Wow.
Nice.
Really, they didn't think that the comics falling through into the kitchen on top of the family would be a good plan.
I bought you, sir.
That's amazing. And I'm just writing all this down so I can tell my wife what I'd like our next home reno project to be.
It requires a fairly tolerant person.
Yes.
And at least in our case, you know, the deal was, you know, I get this, you get the master bathroom designed the way you want, kid.
Yes. It's always a negotiation.
No, just always hopefully a fair compromise in these things.
Indeed.
One of my goals this year is to get some binding done, and I'm about 6 issues away from completing my Superboy and the Legion run. So once I get that done, I'm going to get those bound because those will look great on a shelf, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Paul, you mentioned it in some of your binds where you've got some of those issues still have that fold from the subscription.
Yep. it's just fun keeping them that way. I was rereading for reasons that really make no sense whatsoever some old Lois Lanes past weekend, and I found in it a twofer for the 1972 Comic Art Convention here in New York that I had used as a bookmark at some point.
Yeah.
And it just was, wow, 50 cents off on a 250 convention in
Michigan.
Yeah. Wow.
Cool.
We love seeing those old ads where Superman invites you to Palisades Park.
Yeah, never made it to that. But I don't do well on amusement park rides anyway, so probably a good thing.
One of our favorite things to talk about on the show when they come up are the old Saturday morning cartoon lineups that we see in those books. They're just a ton of fun. When we were talking about the Eye for an Eye storyline, I think we spent a good chunk of one episode talking about the 1984 cartoon lineup.
Exactly.
God bless Saturday morning Starcade. Come on.
Exactly.
We had to talk about it.
Indeed.
So, speaking of conventions, do you plan on attending some cons this year, now attending as a writer?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I'm hoping to have a little more time to see my friends at them. You know, the conventions have been pretty hectic things for me behind the desk the last batch of years, particularly San Diego.
Right.
But you know, I'm signed on for, I think, C2E2 and the new Reed show in Chicago. And that'll be, I guess, right before the Legion stuff starts hitting, so that'll be a nice time to start shilling it. And San Diego, of course.
Yeah.
And
any chance of coming up to Toronto?
I love Toronto. It's a beautiful city. The Toronto convention of the time was the first convention I went away from home to.
Oh, really?
When I was 16, they used to have conventions at York University.
Oh, goodness.
During intersession, and you'd stay in the dorm rooms and hang out there, and I got to explore Toronto. And
very cool.
Feeling the leaden weight of my wallet, where the draft card was going to be any moment now. Looking around and saying, "Yeah, this wouldn't be a horrible place to live." It's a little cold, but it's got a good comic shop or two.
Absolutely.
Had my first Japanese food in Toronto. Oh,
nice. Yeah.
So it's a lovely city. I'd love to find an excuse to be back there. I have, I think part of it will also be the question of where I get invited in all of this. Mm-hmm. There's a real kind of open question till the Legion stuff starts coming out.
Sure.
About whether anyone is going to show up and care, or it's going to be here, you know, here's the doo-wop guy at the rock concert. and he did do cool stuff once, didn't he? What's that? You know, when was that? And did they have dinosaurs still in? And
Rick knows that every show, and he still keeps showing up. So.
Well, but I think that'll somewhat determine what my convention circuit is, because if people are really caring about the work, more of the conventions are going to be more interested in having me there. The DC guys will be sitting here saying, you know, can we get you out there? Also, depending on what other stuff I'm writing, obviously, besides the Legion, that will be a part of it. And then kind of just figuring out what the dynamic of my life is going to be in this new role. I've never been a full-time freelancer before. It's a different mix in life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing the writing. I'm doing some non-comics writing. I'm doing teaching, starting to get some of that organized. Mm. And I've got to kind of figure out how all those rhythms sort themselves together into a coherent lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I'll definitely stop by at C2E2 if I wind up being able to make it there.
Mm-hmm. Please.
Yeah.
Because
I'm not sure where I... And again, I don't have to be at the DC booth the entire convention. I can see the city that I'm going to.
Nice.
You're no longer chained to a desk.
Yay. Yeah.
It's different. And it's, you know, some of it is wonderful, even already.
Uh-huh.
And some of it is just rather strange because you build up a rhythm to your days and a method of working and, okay, this part still works and is still logical, and this other part doesn't work. I've lost some of my superpowers already.
So you're now electric Superman rather than regular Superman.
I guess. Hopefully a more enduring new version. We'll see whether the new ones come in properly and work effectively.
And now, speaking of that, as things transition into from DC Comics to DC Entertainment now, there was talk at the time that you were involved in the transition and sort of as a liaison. How does that work into it all?
You know, I'm retained by the company for many years to come as an advisor to them, and I do what they ask me to do. I've obviously accumulated both some skills, some knowledge, and some relationships over the years. And that's all at the disposal of the company for what they want to use it for productively.
Mm-hmm.
And where they don't want to use it productively, I'm very happy to go back to my room and write and do my other stuff.
Nice deal.
Yeah.
When you pass the baton, you pass the baton.
Okay, so let's. What we want to do is we're going to mention a few things, and we just kind of want you to sort of word associate with it, and just want to try this. So we call this the, of course, lightning round.
We're not starting with broccoli here, are we?
Cross that one off.
Darn.
Okay, so number one, Siobhan Aaron.
Sure. Sort of named after a cousin of a friend of mine and massively misspelled because I had no idea what the real Irish spelling of Siobhan was.
Tyrock.
Oh, I got to figure that out.
Rainbow Girl.
I don't really know her well. Seemed like fun. Had to pay attention to her.
Lalor.
God, haven't been there in a long time.
Villain.
Yeah, villains are good. They make heroes more heroic. We should have some villains. Wish I was better at making them.
All right, and we've kind of mentioned this one before, but all the same, Karate Kid.
He's pretty dead.
Twice over, at least.
Make me cry, Paul. I love Karate Kid.
I was fond of him, but, you know, sometimes you get to keep things you're fond of, sometimes you don't.
Yeah. Prody.
Ooh, I liked Prody. I don't have any immediate plans for him, but I liked Prody.
The Miracle Machine.
No, I think once was enough for that.
Science.
I don't think Starlin's forgiven me yet on that one.
Computo.
Been there, done that. I think it worked well. It's still a great name. Mm-hmm.
And this one runs to Darren because he's a huge fan of this character. Chemical King.
I like Chemical King. I probably shouldn't have killed him.
Darren loves you.
I was enough of a chemistry buff that I actually understood what his power was, which I don't think Carrie ever did.
Really? We just talked about a story where he increased his strength by increasing his metabolism.
Yeah. Well, maybe there's a way of doing that one, but Carrie's a great guy. He was just through the office last week, the week before, first time in a long time we had a chance to sit down and bullshit a little bit, which was fun.
Nice. Is he coming back at all?
He's doing some stuff for the house. I'm hoping that. The one thing I'm hoping to repeat from my last run on Legion is that while I'm doing it, I would hope to be doing all of it as long as I can.
Yeah. I don't mean that
with any arrogance. It's just, I really screwed that up the first time and I did it better the second time. And I like what happened the second time a lot better.
Right. Yeah, and what I meant was not is he coming back to Legion, but just are we going to be about seeing some Kerry Bates work because it is
he's doing a little bit of comics work these days, I think, here and maybe at Marvel as well.
Nice. Mm. Yeah, it's it's like you said, it's the stuff that you read that you read as a kid that you always come back to, and it's just interesting that this is a time frame in which we just had a new series from Jerry Conway with the Death of Animal Man series. Oh. And you know, Len Wein's coming up on.
Len's doing a ton of stuff. I mean, yeah. Len's a major contributor to the house these days, which is wonderful.
And with you coming back, and now you mentioned Kerry Bates, and it's like 12-year-old me is doing a little happy dance right now.
Totally.
Because that's still some of my favorite
stuff. I mean, the question for all of us in it, and it's certainly been raised on enough of the websites, is: are you doing something that is contemporary and relevant, or are you just doing old timers thing?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Mm. And that will be a different question for each writer in the process.
Yeah.
And I just I hope that somebody picking up the books doesn't pick it up on the grounds of a 25-year memory alone, but pick it up on the basis that this is something I'd like to be reading now.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Cause I mean, that's got to be a hard part of it is coming back into something that you've been so long associated with and sort of saying, I want to break away from what I did before and do something new. And I mean, is that the big challenge for you?
Well, it's impossible to be objective about your own work in a situation like that, where you're trying to adapt to changes in style in the field, keep things that you loved about the work, identify things that people will love now, and I'm waiting to see whether the world likes it.
Mm-hmm. What are you currently reading that you're really enjoying?
The book I'm schlepping around this week is Dominic Lapierre's piece on South Africa. Which is he's a wonderful his popular history writer. The guy who did in collaboration is Paris Burning and The Freedom at Midnight. Were two of his great books, and this is his history of how South Africa was settled and what went on in the creation of apartheid, A Rainbow in the Night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I'm just reading it and shuddering. Actually, mm-hmm. when you talk about the issues like xenophobia and can we get along, the deliberate Holocaust-like nature of what was going on and the details in apartheid that certainly I was not conscious of as a young person when I was bothered by it, are just make you shudder.
Right.
So then, I don't know if it's fair to say I'm having fun reading that, but I'm fascinated by that this week. What else? Did a bunch of binge reading of C.P. Sansom this year and Alan First. Went through most of what they had written.
Mm-hmm.
What do we have?
New Twilight novel?
I'm sorry?
The new Twilight novel?
No, I haven't done that. I never was a horror fan even when I was editing books like House of Mystery.
Uh-huh.
It's not scary, don't worry.
I mean, it's probably a good thing for me to read at some point, just given the size audience that it's attracted, and the category that it's in.
Right.
Is a category I wouldn't mind writing in one of these years. But the new Kings
Feel
of
yourself.
Nonfiction collection over Christmas week, that was a lot of fun. Some really interesting, bizarre stories in that. Jeanette Kahn had recommended that to me, and I was finding that fascinating because some of what I hope to be writing is nonfiction ultimately, and need to see what kinds of styles are at work in all of that.
Right.
What else has gone on the shelf lately? I don't know. I burn through this stuff so fast.
Yeah.
And one of the nice things about the shift is I've had a little more time to read and get into the things. Really nice biographies out late last year of Francis Perkins, Alice Roosevelt Longworth, and Genghis Khan. I'd recommend all three of those.
Wow.
Mm.
The Genghis Khan one is kind of a neat revisionist look. There apparently was a massive body of contemporaneous history done on him that was sealed away in some damn mountain in Mongolia for whatever it is, 400 or 500 years,
right,
with no scholars having access to it, that finally became accessible to scholars recently, and that led to a very revisionist look that makes the argument that it's essentially the Mongol system of trade that sparks the Renaissance.
Oh, really?
Wow.
I'm not sure I 100% buy the argument, but it's got a lot going for it.
Yeah. Now you know, you look at these things and you know that soaking them up, and I mean obviously the you know in writing the story your story of this new xenophobic world and tying into to how these things sort of just soak into the consciousness with you know how much of that is going through your head as you're reading this this book on South Africa and the idea of
hopefully all of it. I mean, I've you know, over the years, what I've been reading has had a major influence on what I've written. Mm-hmm. The Starman series I did with Ditko was driven by a history of the Ottoman Empire.
Really?
If you pick it apart, it's basically the Ottoman customs for how they dealt with claimants to their throne taken up to a science fiction level.
Right.
Wow.
That's really neat. Furry color too.
I have one
has
buddy
nothing
who
to do with furniture.
No, I have one buddy who is the rarity in that was an enormous history scholar and a great science fiction fan, and he can take apart Asimov's Foundation and layer it against Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire and work it emperor by emperor and chapter by chapter and show you where the roadmap came from. Which takes nothing away from Asimov's brilliance, in my view.
Right.
Yeah, he was one of the great writers of my childhood. I cherish the moment when Julie was kind enough to introduce me to him when he was in visiting Julie once.
Oh, wow.
Sweet. The drool stain stayed on Julie's floor for ages. but all of these things are always influences, whether they're conscious or unconscious. They go into your point of view of who people are, what people can do, how stories can be built, because human experience runs through its parallels.
Mm-hmm.
And the writer who isn't reading constantly, who isn't putting stuff in his head, doesn't even get to a garbage in, garbage out point of view. There's nothing in, and there's nothing much coming out. Yeah. The really wonderful writers have eclectic taste in what they're interested in, and it goes in, and some of it comes out again.
Yeah.
Mm.
Very nice. Now, actually, Scott's just sent me a couple of more phrases for our word association. First one is, and this is really mainly because we always find an excuse to mention this character, and which is interesting considering he has nothing to do with the Legion, but Buona Beast.
Yes. God bless Bob and Mike. I think there's a Mattel action figure now I haven't managed to get from my shelf. It's either out or just about to come out, which is...
Yeah, it's out. I saw it at the Toys R Us the other day.
Well, if you see another one, pick one up from me, and just I'll be happy to repay you.
All right. You have to come up to the Toronto Fan Expo to get it, though.
I see. Okay. It's a hard bargain, this man.
Yeah, he's a tricky one.
Save on shipping.
And the
really.
And the zombie apocalypse.
Don't know that one.
We
the zombie apocalypse. I asked because we talked to Francis Manipal, and he was totally prepared. He had plans. He had everything.
Okay.
It's quite frightening, in fact.
God bless him.
Francis is the guy you want to hang out with if there's a zombie apocalypse, because he's got it all worked out. with the announcement this week of the Apple iPad, there's been a lot more speculation as to where the sort of digital future of comics is. With your background and with looking at it with the writer's hat on, what are your thoughts on the digital future of comics?
I'm really happy that there's other people in charge of it now.
Very nice.
Sweet. Best answer today, right there.
Absolutely. So. Okay, so we're looking at as you said, probably May for Legion of Superheroes number one, and then the Secret Origin, probably looking at June of this year, and
right.
Obviously we're very excited for these things, Paul, and we're really delighted.
Please go out and invite people in, mug people in the street and say, look, I know it's got a lot of characters in it, but try it. Let's see if we can get as many people enjoying the Legion again as we used to have.
Yeah, this is our goal, sir. This is our goal. This is why we do this show.
Indeed.
It's absolutely a big part of it is that whole idea that everyone's confused about the Legion, and what we try to do is to sort of break it down for people so they can understand who the players are, and it's definitely been something that we've been fans of for a long, long time.
Well, I appreciate the proselytizing, and hopefully it'll work. And hopefully I'll deliver something you guys are happy to be out there talking about.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for your time, Paul. We really do appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care, guys.
Have a fantastic weekend. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh.
And save.
That was so cool.
Yeah. Hang on one second. Let me just stop and save. Okay. So there we go, guys. We just interviewed Paul Levitz.
Wow.
And we even hardly said, hey, remember when you did this? It was really cool.
Yeah.
Really
cool. And he even dropped the bullshit.
Yeah, totally.
Sweet.
Yeah, and so it sounds like it was kind of neat to hear that he's got something coming out from Vertigo as well.
Yeah. I wonder if it's like a House of Mystery story or something.
That's a good point, because he's mentioned that it was something that they're doing. He's like a kind of thing that they're doing, and that to me sounded, as soon as he said that, I thought to myself, are they doing like a little thing where they're going to have a bunch of DCU writers write some Vertigo stuff, and like, I don't know.
That would be cool.
Yeah, it's a neat idea, and when you say about House of Mystery, I mean, he mentioned the fact that he used to edit that book, because he used to be Joe Orlando's assistant editor.
Yeah.
Oh, neat.
I'm a little concerned he had no plans for the zombie apocalypse, but other than that, I guess he's pretty old.
Well, he can just hide among his shelves.
Yeah, exactly. They sound hardcore. While he was talking about the shelves, and I was saying about how that's the next reno project, Jam popped her head in like, I'm keeping my eye on you.
Reno project? What?
I wanted to say, you're going to do that after the printer incident?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, now that I haven't broken my neck with the printer, you know, there's... the hardcore steel shelves. That'll be the way to go.
12-foot tall, 3-foot deep. Wow.
It's a beautiful thing.
3/4 of a ton of bound books.
Yeah. Yeah, you gotta love that.
Steel reinforced bookshelf.
I'm going to say to Jan, you know, you think that I've got a lot of comics.
Look at this.
Seriously.
I was actually wondering about that, because I would say when I was doing a little bit of research on him, I saw a picture of him in front of these bookshelves.
Yeah, I saw that picture too. Yeah.
Oh, look at all those bound comics.
Yeah. I mean, that is pretty exciting, you know, and it's neat because it just, you know, that's been such an interesting area of fandom recently with how people are getting into like with library binding, for example. Yeah. And you know, what that's kind of leading to in, you know, because that's where your back issue market really, really digs in, right? Because now I think that's been a real boon to back issues, because it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, this is a new format for it. And, you know, where they've got like the slip cases and they've got the binding that they do, and you can add the little gold leaf covers and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of fun.
Totally.
How long was the talk, Paul?
About an hour.
Yeah,
cool.
Just over.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did you get a lot of work done?
Actually, I got called away 3 times. Did you notice?
Not really.
That's why I was trying to be quiet on my end.
I just keep looking at the all I do is I keep looking at the things on there to make sure nobody's dropped off the call. And
yeah.
It would be hard to tell.
Yeah, I'm pleased that I learned how to now add a real life caller to the Skype chat. So that's gonna be something
handy. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Definitely, if we ever have Stuart on again.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah. So there we go. We just talked to Paul Levitz, and it sounds like there's some exciting stuff coming up for Legion fans. And it sounds like he's doing some other stuff in the DCU as well.
Yeah. That's what kind of had me excited.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's going to do the Jeff Johns approach where you bring things together. Well, you know, he's an action figure. Be happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and if he wants it, he's got to come up and get it.
Exactly. Sneaky. So let's wrap this one up. Comments, as always, are welcome at legionofsubstitutepodcasters@gmail.com. You can also head over to our forum and let us know what you thought of our interview with Paul Levitz, and that is forum.legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. And we are also on the Twitter, and that is LOSP Podcast. And we're also on Facebook. Just do a search for Legion Substitute Podcasters. Who did you really think that was going to be if not us? And with that, we head back into the time bubble. And though we look forward to the future, we are now going to go back to the past and return to the 21st century. And we will see you all next week.
Love it.
Bye.
Later, taters.